Blog Talk Radio.
Guys, it's here we are. We're at the big night. We thought that the Triple G was going to be a night, big night, but that didn't seem to last more than two rounds, but what do you think about tonight's fight with Mr. Lobachenko?
Well, first of all, it's good to see you guys. How you doing, Butch, Cito? How's everybody
doing?
Doing
good.
Hey, how's it going? Good. Good, Z.
Oh, no, I was going to just say it's a very interesting matchup. It is actually, to me, more competition for Lomachenko than previously before. He's fighting a big guy who's, I mean, he's not going to say he's in his prime. He's sort of in his prime on the downhill side, but he's fighting a bigger guy, a longer guy, who's pretty quick and who has very good footwork. So, I mean, I think, you know, the fight is just going to come down to discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Who's more disciplined? So, but it's a very interesting matchup. It's not going to be a slugfest. Everybody should know that by this time. With Lomachenko, he's a guy who tends not to get in slugfests. He's too skilled to. And Lunares is not the kind of guy who also gets in the slugfest. These are two boxers. So you're going to see quite a bit of chess, and maybe, you know, until some things are figured out, then the pace will probably be picked up.
Mm-hmm.
On paper, this would be Lomachenko's toughest fight on paper, given the fact that Jorge Linares is only 32 years old, so he's still somewhat in his athletic prime. As Zito said, he's on the down end of that prime. And he's moving up to 135, which Linares has campaigned at for the last 8, 9, 10 fights. So there's some things on paper that make this Lomachenko's toughest fight. As we all know, paper burns. What happens in a ring is the truth machine. So it'll be interesting to see if Linares can use his natural physical advantages along with his, I mean, highly beautiful boxing skills to offset Lomachenko's tremendous technique and talent.
Okay. Well, what do you think, although it didn't last too long, what do you think of Triple G's successful defense of his WBA, WBC TKO of
Venice Venerosian?
Yeah.
I think that first thing, I want to give Venerosian credit. He came to fight. He didn't shy away. He didn't back down. He didn't throw scared punches. And he hit Triple G with a shot that buckled Triple G. First time I've seen Triple G buckle like that. Made the shot reverberated through Triple G's whole body to his toes. With that said, that was in the first round. Second round, Triple G wasn't playing around. It was as simple as that. He went out there to knock Medeiros out, and he achieved that rather quickly. So, I mean, all kudos to Medeiros for going out there and putting up a courageous effort, but this was expected. It was lined up this way. I mean, everybody expected it, so I mean, it kind of unfolded the way it was going to unfold.
You know, to kind of correspond with what Zito said, I think really not much can be gleaned from what happened last week in that fight. Part of it is Medeiros's a 154-pound guy who's never fought at 160 and hasn't fought at all in 2 years. Going up against the biggest punching 160 guy in the last, you know, 10, 15 years. So, I mean, what happened in the ring was supposed to happen. What it did do was give Triple G a chance to go ahead and make weight and rehydrate and stay sharp in the manners that keep a fighter active, right, and get a knockout again. So he needed that for his activity with him being 36. But as far as what we can glean from where Triple G is at or what we can, you know, can be said about Medeiros, not much could be said. What happened was supposed to happen based on the circumstances that the fight was put together.
Yeah, he took that fight on a short notice. It was about 4 or 6 weeks, wasn't it?
Yeah, like he took the fight really, you know, really like on 3 weeks' notice. And with that said, he hadn't fought in 2 years, and he never fought at 160. So I think the fact that he took the fight, you know, he needed a paycheck. He hadn't fought in 2 years, so he did what a working fighter is supposed to do, and all credit to him for taking the fight and standing in there fighting. But the fact of the matter is, what else could he do? 2 years off, you're not going to be sharp enough to go ahead and fight behind a jab and stick and move when that's not Vanis' game anyway. And in two weeks, you don't have enough time to really formulate a proper game plan to go ahead and deal with a guy like Triple G, who is significantly bigger and stronger than you. So, you know, it says nothing negative about either fighter, but I don't think we can take anything positive away from it either. It's just something that kind of happened because Triple G wanted to fight and save the day. So we got to fight, you know.
Yeah, right. What I will take away from that, to be honest, is that a 154, naturally 154-pound man hit Triple G with a shot that he hasn't been hit with at middleweight. And the effects of it were obvious. So, I mean, you know, just if you could take anything out of it, is that, I mean, the guy can feel, I mean, as far as that goes.
We know the fight rags were not too unimpressed with the way that fight went off. They seemed to give kudos to both sides, and exactly for what you were just saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Matarosian, he put up a courageous effort, although short-lived, and Golovkin, he did what was supposed to do. I mean, especially under those circumstances, the guy kind of rocked you with the shot in the previous round. I mean, if you have the ability to go ahead and smash him out of there, that's the perfect time to do it. You get your head together. Next round, you come out there, no more games. No, the purpose is to go out there and take him out. And he did that very effectively and in a very, very timely manner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the other point I wanted to ask you about, Ty, was while we were on the air last week, David Haye lost the fight back. He was knocked out.
We watched the fight. We watched the fight right before we came up on air last night. David Haye is shot. I mean, you know, it's a word that, you know, sometimes gets thrown around a little too lightly. But he physically is shot. And in the sense that he definitely doesn't have his reflexes, his speed, or explosion. He's a guy who fought more with athleticism than technique, not that he didn't have it, but athleticism was his major attribute that allowed him to implement the technique the way he did. And he no longer has the athleticism to implement his technique. And so now you see that his technique is lacking. On top of that, his body can no longer handle the rigors of a fight camp and a fight. Like, his body will break down. And even in last fight, he credited Tony Bellew, said his body was absolutely fine. But you could see once he got up from the knockdown, he was hobbled. And he's just not physically at this point able to withstand the rigors of a camp in a fight. And when it gets to that point, it's time to hang it up.
Right.
Like something said, you know, like the something I forget who said it to me, but, you know, it's always been said, oh, fighters, you know, they get in the ring, they age overnight. And it may have been Nassim Richardson who said this, that said fighters don't age in a ring overnight. He goes, they're aging in that training camp. He said, and you could see it in the camp. He goes, if I ever see, he was talking about Bernard Hopkins. He said, and if I ever see it in the camp, we're not going to have the fight, which to me is part of the reason why maybe Nassim wasn't in Bernard Hopkins' corner for his last fight. So I think, you know, it's funny because Shane McGuigan threw in the towel for David Haye when he fought Tony Bellew the first time and tore his Achilles tendon. Shane McGuigan wasn't in the corner this time. So I think, you know, people could see the writing on the wall, but hopefully David Haye can see the writing on the wall because he still seemed kind of noncommittal about retirement. But it's obvious that his body physically just cannot handle the rigors of a professional boxing career at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree, and really there are two things I have to kind of say. The first thing is I always preach that skill is going to transform or is going to transfer over athleticism. Now, if you have somebody who's majorly athletic against somebody who's majorly skilled but has no athleticism, a lot of times that athleticism may trump it. But to be honest, when you have guys at certain levels, at the same level, the more skillful is going to tend to win, especially in a fight. So when you especially now you're getting to heavyweight where guys usually last longer in their careers.
Right.
Everything Ty said is absolutely on point. David Haye is, I mean, he's past it. he's past it. I mean, even and to say that, I usually say, guys, you know, they're past it at a certain level. You know, they can't fight at, you know, top-notch level. They go ahead and earn paychecks at lower levels. To me, David Haye probably should leave boxing alone. He should probably, just because it seems more harmful for him after fights. And then now, you said the last fight, the last two fights, I mean, it's harmful. Especially the last fight, it got harmful during the fight. As simple as that. His legs went, I don't know if he got hurt when he got knocked down. Point is, he got knocked down hard, and he kept getting knocked. He has a major chin. He wasn't out of brain, I should say, but his legs were never the same. His legs were gone. David Haye's a guy who, as Ty said, that athleticism, that explosion, that, you know, come at different angles type guy. But David Haye was also a wild throwing guy too. He had some of his technique was lacking, but that athleticism covered it up. If his legs weren't going to go, it would have happened to him eventually. Because to be honest, right, that's what happens to all athletic guys who aren't the most skillful, or who don't apply the skill. With that said, Deontay Wilder is a kind of guy who you worry about. A guy who I worry about as far as injuries, and that also is Keith Thurman. Just the fact that his body seems to be betraying him to a certain extent. And when you go through those rigors and you're on that top-notch level, you can't stay on that top-notch level when your body is betraying you like that.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and I think just to kind of concur with something Zito said, athleticism erodes. Skills can be refined. Athleticism cannot be refined. It erodes in time.
Yeah, he has had a number of injuries over the last couple years. We know that he's now suffering from a broken hand, which he'll be back in the gym, according to Dan, in a very short time. But, you know, it's amazing that the guy's been fighting for about, my God, since he was 9 years old.
Yeah.
So, you know, how much more can the body take him? He's
Exactly.
You know. And,
you know, one thing David Haye said, too. David Haye specifically said he knows that it's the rigors of his style. He knows it's the way he always fought with the explosion and putting full torque in the shots and just the way he fought. He knows the way he fought is what, you know, led his body to degrade over time and led to the injuries, because he fought at such a explosive, you know, type of rhythm. And you know, you started to look at David Haye and kind of, you know, like Keith Thurman, he would go ahead and make it through a training camp and he'd fight. Then he'd be injured during a fight and have a hard time making it through the next training camp without getting injured. That's the same thing that happened to Keith. Keith fought, got, you know, hurt, went to get the elbow taken care of. And then when he goes into the next training camp, he can't make it through that training camp without getting hurt. When that starts happening to a fighter on a consistent basis, unfortunately, like happened to Keith. And last time we had Dan on here, I wanted to ask him, you know, about that. But when that starts to happen to a fighter, what you're starting to see is their body just physically breaking down. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much the fight itself that's doing it, but it's the rigors of training. And then when you add the fight, like with David Haye had no problem getting through 2 and 3 rounds when he was fighting these guys before he fought, stepped up in class and fought Tony Bellew, the two guys he fought during his comeback. But even in those 2 rounds, he was still suffering minor injuries during training. And so that's when you start to see a guy's body breaking down. So with Keith, I hope it's just some freak stuff going on, because he's 29, not 39 like David Haye, 37 like David Haye. So he's in his physical prime. So you really, you know, hope he can recover and get back to what he was.
Mm-hmm. Hey, well, you know, tonight we have Vasily Lomachenko and Jorge Linares fighting. What's your thoughts on that one, Ty?
Well, outside of what I just said, I think I got to lean towards Lomachenko. at this stage, just because, you know, again, he right now he seems not only to be the better craftsman and, you know, a special athlete and a special technician, but he also seems to be dialed in. And, you know, every now and then a fighter get in a zone where they, like Manny Pacquiao, right? He had that zone between, you know, the David Diaz fight and the Miguel Cotto fight where he looked unstoppable. Sweet Pete Whitaker had his zone, you know what I mean, for a 3-4 year stretch where he looked unstoppable. You know, I think right now Lomachenko is in that zone, and it takes something special to bring him out of the zone. Special could be a Jorge Linares. It could be a fighter who is extremely very, very good with the weight advantage, right? So if they're the same size, then maybe very good doesn't get the job done. But very good and being a little bit bigger, that could be special. So you never know. You never know. But I got to lean towards Lomachenko.
And there's another there's another big fight on tonight with Ali against what was it, Maniga?
Sadam Ali.
Sadam Ali against was it Maniga?
Jaime Munguia. They wanted to try to get to fight Triple G on short notice. So actually, Loeffler and company were trying to get Jaime Munguia to take that assignment against Triple G instead of Vanes Medeiros. Jaime Munguia has a beautiful 24 knockouts. It's fought absolutely no one on the world stage as of yet. And he's 21 years old and fights at 154. So one thing that shows is that Triple G definitely didn't want to risk any money, any potential money with this short notice fight. Can't blame him at all. But Munguia, Sadam Ali could be quietly the fight of the night. Sadam Ali is definitely more skillful and is more experienced on a bigger stage. But Munguia is bigger. He's younger. He's fresh. He doesn't know how to lose. And he seems to be somewhat relentless. Not the fastest guy, but he's a pressure, you know, fighting Mexican fighter. So you know what he brings to the table, including a tremendous left hook to the body. Jesus.
Yeah. This fight here, I anticipate it's going to be more action packed than the Lomachenko Linares fight.
Two-sided action as opposed to one-sided action, possibly.
Possibly. But to be honest, they both have the styles to go ahead and kind of to deal with each other to where Munguia's open. He's open. He's usually coming forward. He's a long guy, big guy. He fights behind his height to get in, to get his punches off. He has a beautiful left hook, as Ty said, and a beautiful uppercut, left uppercut. The thing I'm going to say, though, is he's not the most reactful guy. His reaction time is a little slow. He's plotting. He has a habit of plotting. Sadam Ali can carve him up, has the potential to carve him up. But Jaime has the style to come forward, throw those hard punches. The guy hits hard. And that's one thing Sodom doesn't like, a long guy who hits hard. It could be interesting. I lean towards Sodom just off of experience alone because he's been in with world-class competition. But this is a fight to where, I mean, this guy could do very – I don't want to say – he could knock Sodom out. He could knock Sodom out. He could punish Sodom. I mean, this could be a very harmful fight.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I'm very much looking forward to the Lomachenko-Linares fight, but there's a part expecting to witness a great performance by Lomachenko after figuring Linares out, right? With the Sadam Ali-Jaime Munguia fight, what I love about that fight is I really don't know what to expect because everything you said I can envision. I know Sadam Ali has the skills, the speed, and the technique, and the amateur pedigree at that, and the professional pedigree, to, like you said, to carve Munguia up. Munguia has his defensive lapses. He's young. He's still inexperienced, and you see that in the way he fights. With that said, Sadam Ali is a guy who runs hot and cold. Sadam Ali at his best, when he fought Juan Carlos Abreu. Was it Abreu, Zito?
Yeah,
that was probably the best performance I ever saw from him. Now, granted, Abreu had been active, yada yada yada, but still, Sadam Ali ran hot that game. When I saw him fighting Jesse Vargas, he didn't run so hot. So I've seen Sadam Ali kind of, he's a guy who, even though he has only one loss, he's a guy who you're always waiting for him to break through and be the guy that they thought he was going to be as an amateur. Maybe it's happened with Miguel Cotto. It could be a confidence issue. I see some other flaws in his actual boxing game that I think kind of hamper him. And with those specific flaws, Jaime Munguia could be a very dangerous opponent. I think a big part of it comes down to how dialed in is Saddam Ali. And at 21 years old, how much is Munguia learning from fight to fight? You know what I mean? Because at that age, these guys they're like canvases, right? They pick up everything so quickly. And the improvement from fight to fight for a 21-year-old is typically a little bit more dramatically than you're going to see from a 27, 28-year-old. So the Jaime Munguia that I saw fight in his last fight versus the Saddam Ali I saw fight Cotto, I would lean towards Saddam Ali. But Saddam Ali has a bigger, younger guy in front of him who could be not significantly, but pretty different this fight than he was last fight. Could be just that much better. So, very interesting fight. It's a fight I really have a hard time predicting, as opposed to the Lomachenko fight, which is the bigger fight tonight.
Yeah, we have more proof with the Lomachenko-Linares fight as well as both fighters. One thing I'm going to say is you hear guys don't know how to win. And that's very true. But then with young guys, sometimes they don't know how to lose. They don't know any better.
Undefeated fighter. They haven't learned how to lose yet. Undefeated fighter.
And there's a truth to that. There's such a truth because you have guys in every sport to where they seem to excel at every level. They have championships from high school to the pros. So, I mean, you have those kind of guys. Same thing in boxing where guys just – I mean, even if they have a loss, it might be an unfair judge loss, or it might be a razor sharp, debatable, however it goes. And I mean, you have guys who just have the knack to to pull through. Or they just.
Munguia has never fought past six rounds, or 10. He's never fought past 10.
Yeah.
And it will be interesting to see how he can manage a fight when he gets some stiff resistance, which Saddam Ali will give him some resistance. I don't know who his – I don't know the people around him. I don't know who his trainers are. Obviously, he's with Golden Boy. I'm not sure who his people are. So it would be interesting to see, what his fight IQ is like, because this is going to test different aspects of his game that haven't been tested yet.
Sure. And Saddam Ali, he's a guy that, as you said, he has the flaws to where Jaime can get to him. Saddam, he reminds, and we were talking about it before, he reminds me a lot of Amir Khan. He has a bit more punch variety, but he doesn't have the physical gifts. They both have those defensive flaws of pulling straight back with their hands down and back with their head and trying to use their feet. Jaime's too long for that, to be honest. Now, his reaction.
Left hook, though.
He'll punch while Saddam's punching. The other thing is, and I'd say specifically while Saddam's punching, because Saddam wasn't the biggest cracker at 147. So
exactly.
I mean, when he did to Cotto, granted Cotto's a great fighter wasn't when Saddam saw him, and Cotto had just went through a war with Kamagay. So, and at the end of his career. So, Cotto had nothing left. Nothing left against a guy who
was left. So, and as we were watching the fight, you were saying that Cotto was going to be done after this. And you even, if I remember, you even were kind of on the fence with the Saddam Ali fight because of what Yoshihiro Kamagay kind of took away from Cotto in that last victory that Cotto had.
Yeah, exactly, because if Cotto would have saw Kamagay maybe 4 years earlier, it would have been he would have had much more success. But he'd have had much more success. The Cotto we saw against Kamagay was a shell of himself anyway. So for him to pull that fight out was courageous and old man guy. After you give a performance like that, you left the table. So when he saw Saddam Ali, a guy who's just outright faster. He really couldn't catch up to him and couldn't see a lot of stuff that he was going to get with, which which really dealt with a lot of his punch resistance. Cotto, you hit Cotto with a blind shot, he's usually going to buckle. I mean, Pacquiao did it to him. I mean, he that happens to a lot of guys, but Cotto's, I mean, he's more sensitive to that. With that said, Saddam Ali is not a guy who hits hard. So, I mean, he could carve Jaime up potentially, but now, if Jaime adjusts or just starts trying to walk through or walking through, Saddam Ali's not a guy who does big adjustments either. So now, what is he going to do? I think if as the fight goes on, that's going to really be the tell sign. I think Saddam's going to whitewash him early. I think. So.
Saddam Ali is a guy you described as having pop at 147. He was able to get Cotto, but again, like you said, Cotto was kind of dense at that time. But at most, he's been described as having pop, not a hard puncher.
Yeah,
pop. And pop against a hard-charging young Mexican who so far has proved to have a stout chin. We don't know. We'll see tonight. We'll learn. But pop at 150, pop at 147 does not necessarily translate to stopping a hard-charging opponent at 154. Like, for instance, pop at 147 does not get the job done against Jared Hurd at 154. So, you know what I mean? I saw Pop at 154 not get the job done against Jared Hurd at 154. So, Saddam Ali, you know, there's a part of this fight that it's really all about who Jaime Munguia is. It's about Saddam Ali, but we know who Saddam Ali is, but it's about who Jaime Munguia is and what he can bring to the table at 154.
Absolutely. The most that we're going to tell with Saddam Ali is what he can bring to the table at 154. Just the weight. That's it. I mean, style-wise, he is who he is.
Yeah, and even Jaime, like, and to me, Saddam Ali beating Jaime Munguia, depending on how he beats him, it doesn't say more about Saddam Ali. It lets me know where Jaime Munguia is. You know what? This guy could be great in 2 or 3 years, or, you know, he has a certain ceiling to him. Saddam Ali, I know where his ceiling is at 154. At 154, he needs to stay in his lane and fight the Jaime Munguias and the Liam Smith, and he needs to stay away from the Charlos and the Lells and the Herds. You know, that's a different breed of animal at 154. And Saddam Ali is not in that class by any stretch of the imagination. He wasn't in that class at 147. So.
No, yeah, exactly. I was going to say he's not at that class with the weight. I mean, if he bone structured and measured out with those guys, I mean, you're dealing with a different class. I mean, simple as that. And is yet to see if Jaime Munguia is even Saddam Ali's class. So.
Well, you know, we got another fight coming up that I wanted to talk to you guys about on June 9th with Horn and Terrence Crawford. It's June 9th, and that's coming up very shortly. What do you think about that one?
I think that fight is a lot more interesting than people expect it to be. I think that fight could be a lot tighter than people expect it to be. Based on Jeff Horn relatively, I guess, rough application of fundamentals, right? And everyone's judging him basically from the Pacquiao fight. And what everyone remembers, the narrative of that fight is that he basically was very young, rough and tough. You know what I mean? Too rough and tumble and fouled Manny a lot, and Manny should have got the decision. That's the narrative of that fight. When I watched that fight, after the fight, I didn't think Manny wanted to fight. Zito was sitting next to me. He didn't think Manny wanted to fight either. Also, before the fight settled into that rough and tumble mode, what I saw was a guy who was kind of outboxing Pacquiao. Now, I think a part of that is how much of that was Pacquiao, how much of that was Jeff Horn. But what I did see in Jeff Horn, outside of the physicality, was some clever application of skills given his limited athleticism. Terrence Crawford has been a monster at 140 and below. But even with that said, the best fighters on Terrence Crawford's resume are Victor Postal, Julius Ndongo, and Yuriorkis Gamboa. Yuriorkis Gamboa may have been the most prodigious talent on his resume, but Yuriorkis Gamboa was small. It's smaller than Terrence Crawford. Crawford has never fought a guy physically bigger than him. Postal was taller, but he's never fought a guy physically bigger than him. And for the first time that he's doing it at welterweight against a guy who knows how to employ his physicality and a guy who's a much more clever boxer than people give him credit for. Do I think Jeff Horn wins the fight? No, I lean towards Terrence Crawford. However, I would not be surprised if Jeff Horn upset the apple cart.
Mm-hmm.
What I like is Jeff Horn's chances. Two things with that. Well, it's actually a few things. Jeff Horn himself can mix it up. He can do a little bit of everything. He can box from the outside. He can go ahead and fight on the inside. Technically, I mean, he's not the best at either. He's not what you'll call a master at either, but he can capably do both. He's a rough guy who could take a shot. I know that. And his advantages in this fight are size, and he beat the boogeyman southpaw at welterweight. So as far as Terrence Crawford switching, he's already saw the best southpaw he's going to say. Now, was Pacquiao
the
best Pacquiao?
That's a good point.
Pacquiao was maybe not the best Pacquiao, but I guarantee you that southpaw was better than Terrence Crawford's southpaw. So as far as that goes, he's not going to see a whole bunch faster, new. Maybe new angles, but he's not going to really see anything new. Definitely not faster. Crawford's feet aren't Pacquiao's. Much more plodding with his feet, much more deliberate with his delivery system. With that said, Crawford himself mixes it up well. We don't know what Crawford's power is at welterweight, and we know that Jeff Horn can take a shot. We don't know how Crawford can take a shot at welterweight either. I mean, he himself is as good as he is, he's a reactionary fighter. He has a leaky defense. But, I mean, he counters well. His reactions are so good that he can slip a punch while throwing a punch. So, I mean, and not many guys could do that effectively to get that real, to get those good punches off.
I thought he can book him do a dance at 130 when he hit him. So
Just saying. So now you have a guy who's willing to go ahead and do whatever you're doing, put himself out there to do that. I mean, he'll try that on the outside. He'll try to rough and tumble you on the inside. That's another thing. Jeff Horn's a fighter. He's a fighter. He's a fighter that happens to be in a boxer's, you know, form. Crawford is the same, but I think he's more of a boxer who's more just happens to be a fighter. You can kind of tell in guy's style. If things get a little too rough, a guy who's used to fighting, they're going to try to employ boxing, but they're still going to fight. You're going to see that hard fighting. They're going to go harder with it. Other guys are going to tend to maybe shy away and figure some things out. So, I mean, as I say, his fight is interesting. Crawford, to me, is technically a level better, period. Technically, his boxing is a total level better. With that said, he's maybe a little quicker. With that said, that's probably all of his advantages. Experience-wise, as Ty said, his best defeats, I mean, he may have fought better steady in competition than Horn, but Horn has fought the boogeyman. So, I mean, to me, that makes his competition all the better. So, I mean, as I say, it lines up interesting. It's not going to be one side. I think a lot of people think it's going to be one-sided. It might have controversy written all over it.
And it could be one-sided. We could be dead wrong. But
it could be.
At the same time, there are certain things that we see. And something that Zito pointed out, too, is that Pacquiao, I forgot Pacquiao, that he just fought a southpaw in Pacquiao, well, before he fought Gary Corcoran. But with that said, at this point, you know, Terrence Crawford's in his prime. Terrence Crawford right now is more efficient and more effective than Pacquiao. His timing is going to be better. Shots that Pacquiao missed, you would expect Terrence Crawford to land at this point in time. Reflexively, he'll be better. One thing that Zito pointed out, just far as seeing a southpaw, one thing Terrence Crawford is not going to present Jeff Horn with is more looks than Manny Pacquiao presents you with from the southpaw stance. That's his natural fighting stance. His feet are very lively. He's constantly trying to cut those angles. Terrence Crawford's a little bit more flat-footed when he's southpaw. Mm-hmm. So Terrence Crawford
even though he may lean over to get to give himself an angle or take a half step to the side, he nowhere near offers as many looks from the southpaw stance as Pacquiao does. I completely agree with Zito on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you were talking about Manny, and I noticed this week he brought Nedito Donaire's father in to help him bulk up for his fight with Lucas Matisse. I don't know if you saw that, Ty.
Yeah, I did. And what it shows me is that what Pacquiao's doing towards the late stage of his career is he's employing Filipinos, which I think is a wonderful thing. You know, I think he and Freddie had a tremendous amount of success. The way he chose to walk away from Freddie, that's between he and Freddie. But the standpoint of him trying to empower people like Boo Boy, who was his childhood friend, and he always took with him. And when he knows he's stepping away from the game, but he wants to transition Boo Boy to being able to be successful for himself. For him to employ Nenito Donaire's father, Papa Donaire, even though, you know, he's been successful, still it just shows that he's trying to, you know, employ his people and empower his people. I think that's a wonderful thing.
What do you think about his style? Do you think that Z? Do you think he'll change his style at all?
Well, I mean, not really. Not really. And to be honest, he can't. I mean, Pacquiao is who he is. He's going to go out the way he's going to go out. Against Matisse, he's going to change certain aspects of what he does. As every fighter, you know, they have to tweak some things in every fight. Especially when you know who the competition is. Yeah, always in the game plan. As far as style, well, I mean, he's going to throw maybe different punches that he has in his arsenal, but he's not going to find the right hook. Pacquiao is not going to find a devastating right hook. That's not going to happen. He's not going to sit up there and dominate a fight totally with his jab. He's not that guy. He's essentially a one-handed fighter. He's essentially a one-handed fighter. He's always kind of met. With that said, he's one of the greats. I mean, whatever anybody says about him, he's one of the greats. And Matisse was one of the goods. I mean, it's like that. Now, how did Pacquiao decrease, you know, to one of the goods? Yes, he has. He's one of the okays now. To where Matisse, has he dropped? How far has he dropped? That's all his fighters back to him. Pacquiao could bulk up as much as he wants. He still has to hit the scales at 147. And Pacquiao, he's not going to rehydrate to 160-something. I mean, he's to 165. He's not heavy. He's not going to do that. And really, Matisse is going to be heavier coming into the ring, period. He's going to rehydrate heavier than Pacquiao. However it goes down, Pacquiao is going to be the lighter man, the smaller man. I don't know if that even got to matter. If Pacquiao slowed up enough and Matisse has it will. I mean, just person for person, you put them on equal level playing field. Pacquiao should whitewash Matisse all day. Mm-hmm. But they're older and things tend to happen.
Sure.
But, like Matisse is a better boxer than Jeff Horn. He doesn't have the physical gifts Jeff Horn has. But as far as just pure boxing, Matisse is a better boxer. And as Ty said earlier, Jeff Horn, early in the fight, was out-boxing Pacquiao.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that could, you know, that's something to look at.
And at 39, yeah. No fighter changes. No fighter can change at 39, especially one who is also, you know, having a fully thriving political career. There's no change at 39. Again, skills can be refined, but I think when you look at Pacquiao, and even with all the switches in his personnel in his corner, what's he really switching from and to? He's been with, you know, he's been the fighter he is, and he's been for the last 8-9 years, he's a finished product. He's been the same guy. I haven't seen his skills any more refined than what they've, you know, been refined to. And with that said, he's been with Freddie Roach and, you know, for a tremendous number of years. And that's where Boo Boy's been. Boo Boy's always been a second in the corner. So even with the change in personnel, he'll have a Filipino speaking to him in Filipino. But as far as the training regimen, Boo Boy learned by watching him and Freddie all those years. So I don't expect much of a change at all. In fact, I think he'll be extremely comfortable.
because I think he'll feel good about what he's also doing to feel good. And I think he really trusts B-Boy more than he trusts Freddie, you know, just because of the friendship they have.
Right.
As far as him and his game plan to beat Matisse, I think a lot of Pacquiao's game plan is going to come down, kind of like David Haye. If he recognizes what he is realistically as opposed to what he was. You know, Shane McGuigan said the hardest thing he had with David Haye going into the first Tony Bellew fight was trying to convince David Haye that you need to fight like a 37-year-old, not a 21-year-old. So I think, you know, that's where we talk about that refinement of skills. Does Pacquiao refine his skills to fight Matisse in accord with the athletic dynamo he still is today? Or is he still trying to fight like the guy he fought, you know, who fought, you know, Marco Antonio Barrera and Eric Morales? Because he's not that whirling dervish anymore. So that's where that refinement of skills come in. He won't be able to change. You know, like Zito said, you don't, you know, at this stage of the game, all of a sudden, you know, you show up and you have this tremendous right hook. It's not going to happen. You can refine it and learn to use it better. And that's a matter of you know, I don't think Pacquiao can because, you know, for the past 6 or 7 years, he has been kind of part-time. And when you're part-time, you don't really refine your skills like that.
Right. And, you know, yeah. He's getting older. He's on the campaign trail again to win his seat back as a senator over there. And he has ambition of being elected governor, which is the same as being president over there. So he's got a lot of things on his mind before he even gets down to boxing. I just worry that is he extending this thing too long in his career?
You know what? I don't think so, because I think it's what makes him happy. And I think what happens is because Pacquiao was such a phenom, and not only that, but such a beloved figure in his country and his homeland, that people put their expectations of what he should be and what he should be doing in the ring, they put those expectations on him when that's not necessarily the expectation he has of himself. I don't think Pacquiao is necessarily looking to be, you know, to go out there and win all the titles and, you know, clear out the welterweight division. I don't think that's where he's at. I still think he likes to fight. He likes to perform. I still think he likes the attention, the adulation. He loves it, you know. And I think there's certain fights he'll take. Like, he's talking about Matisse. He's also talking about fighting a Lomachenko. You know, he's at that stage in his career where he wants certain challenges, but he knows he's not trying to, he has nothing to prove. He's not trying to clear out the welterweight division and fight Keith Thurman and Errol Spence and all those guys. That's not where he's at in his career. In his career, right now he's on basically, you know what it is, it's the retirement tour where, you know, he's seeing this guy and, you know, just seeing how far he could take his skills and enjoying it, because obviously he still enjoys it.
Yeah, Manny Pacquiao he lives in the Philippines. Philippines is an extremely poor country. Manny Pacquiao has a name that makes millions of dollars for himself. Manny Pacquiao, I've read, has built like 1,000 homes in the Philippines. You know, just homes, you know, for Filipinos. Like, real, not how I'm going to say. You know, nonprofit.
Right.
So, so you know, the guy, he's putting his money to work. He's making money, and he's spreading his money out to his poor countrymen. I mean, that, as I say, I don't like saying
employing
that.
He's employing them on his team. He's, like you said, he's employed Donaire. He's employed Boo Boy and the other guy, too. I forget the other gentleman that's part of their team. Hasn't been along as long, another Filipino. This fight is in Malaysia. So he's really looking to bring a boom to, you know, Southeast Asia too, you know, not just Philippines. That's why it's in Malaysia, because it's closer to the Philippines, Southeast Asia. So I think what he's doing is kind of beyond, for him at least, his mission is a little different right now than, say, Errol Spence's mission. And I think in a sense, because of where he's at in his career, what happens is, unfairly to a certain extent, these expectations get put on him to be that hungry, you know, dynamo who's ripping through the welterweight division. That's not where he's at right now. He's got other things going on. And I respect that. He's still competing at a very high level. And if he wins this, he wins it's the WBA regular title, but the super title right now is held by Keith, who as we know, relinquished one of the straps. I believe it was the IBF or the WBC. The WBC, I believe he relinquished it because he's injured. So he still holds one strap, but this strap that Pacquiao and Matisse is fighting for, that Matisse holds, would be the junior varsity strap to keep Thurman's varsity title. So never know. You never know. He still can beat at a high level.
And who's to say, I mean, really, that he can't do both? I mean, he can't be a politician and a boxer. I mean, if he's effective at both, I'm going to be honest. If he wasn't a politician, I would see the same thing in the ring. So, I mean, I don't know his politics, but from what I see, Pacquiao, he'll do whatever he needs to, you know, as far as his politics, and then the guy work out. I mean, I haven't I've never seen Pacquiao, you know, out of shape, you know, with a belly. He's always fit.
Right.
I mean, the guy always, seems ready. So I don't see any of his duties in one way, you know, on at that end at least. Now, and I haven't really heard of anything, you know, as far as his duties in boxing, holding back anything that he's doing in politics. So,
you know, but they also talk about how he's just distracted, and politics are distracting him from his boxing career. The ring locked in focus. What I'm seeing is a 39-year-old guy who's a small guy on his decline. It's just it's what happens at 39. You're not the same guy. Floyd to me looked horrible in the Andre Berto fight. He looked absolutely atrocious to be in the Andre Berto fight. And I remember watching that fight and saying to myself, this has to be it. Because if he fights any of these young lions, he's going to get murdered. He totally couldn't get his offense off. And that's how Pacquiao looked in the Jeff Horn fight to me. Maybe not as bad to me, but he couldn't get his offense off. And you start to come to a point where, like, you know, they're just at a point physically where if they fight any of these young guys, sometimes it doesn't even have to be a special guy. But just Jeff Horn, I don't find him special. I mean, I think he's good, and he could be very good, but I think he's good. But you get a young guy in front of you and you're an older guy who can't pull the trigger, sometimes it's just the spirit of the age. It's just it's the zeitgeist of what's going on. You know what I mean? It is what it is. Father Time really beat you that night. There's no way a prime Bernard Hopkins loses to Joe Smith. No way on earth. But all of a sudden you can't get out of the way shot. You can't get shots off anymore.
Right.
You know? So it just happens. And for Pacquiao, I think what we're witnessing is a decline. That's all as simple as that.
Right. Well, that was what I was saying in the beginning. I'm worried that it is a decline. And I hate to see him go out that way. But one more fight I wanted to ask you guys about on June 9th. We got Jermell Charlo versus Austin Trout. Trout hasn't been fighting at all this year, has he?
Yeah, he lost to Hurd, and I think he took a comeback fight earlier this year because he wanted to stay sharp. Because part of his issue with the Hurd fight was that he was going into that fight with, like, you know, maybe close to 18 months inactivity.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing happened when he fought Jermall Charlo, and he was going in with a lot of inactivity. What I saw was the guy who boxed brilliantly, actually, to me. The Jermall Charlo fight, the Hurd fight, were actually maybe a couple of Trout's best performances. I just saw a guy who was just severely outgunned. You know, these guys, Trout was what I thought was a pretty big junior middleweight until I saw Jermall Charlo and Hurd. Those guys are giants at that weight. And, Trout boxed his ass off. It was, you know, probably the best pure boxing I'd ever seen Trout do, just punching and stepping around. And he literally was worn down by trying to fight this guy and chop down this mountain and keep it up this mountain off of him. Literally, just worn down, just was spent. And against Jermall Charlo, I thought he won the fight. But the reason why they gave it to Charlo and the reason why, you know, you could clearly see throughout the fight is even though to me he was not boxing Jermall Charlo, it's just that his blows were nowhere near as impactful because Jermall Charlo was just so much bigger. And he just absorbed the blow so much better. He's, you know, a harder puncher. The size differential is not as big with Jermell Charlo. And I think he stands a better chance than he did against those two guys. But at this point in time, you know, unfortunately, I don't know if Charlo's kind of learned how to be a bridesmaid and not a bride.
you know, because outside of that Cotto fight, he seems to come up just a hair short in these big fights. And right now, Jermell Charlo is in his prime. He's peaking. He's becoming a much more devastating lights-out kind of puncher. And I could see Trout giving him fits. And I could see controversy, but Trout's not going to win the fight. He either won't do enough, or I'll watch the fight with my brother Zito, and I'll say, you know, Z, I thought Trout won the fight, but they're going to give it to Charlo. And even with that, even if I think Trout won the fight, I'm still going to feel like he just didn't do enough, though, to put the stamp on it. So I kind of expect the same performance. He'll give Charlo fits throughout the fight, but just won't quite do enough to win.
Yeah, I agree totally. And Charles is going to be the smaller man in this fight again. Not significantly than he was in the past two fights with the heavier brother Charlo and Herb, who's just ridiculously heavy to be 154. With that said,
ridiculously heavy to be 154 pounds.
Yeah.
He's heavy to be a certain weight. That is insane, but it's true.
We have eyes. Anyway, you figure that. I mean, what I figured also is this. I mean, outside of size, Charlo is running into the best boxer he has in three fights. The best boxer he has in three fights, because this is the Charlo brother that can box. The other Charlo brother is a hard hitter. He can box, yes, but he's more of a hard hitter.
Yeah, this one's the more fluid of the two.
Yeah, this one's more fluid. Yeah, this one is more of the pure boxer. This fight's a bit more dangerous for Trout than I think the other two. The other two, Trout used his skill. He used his skill, and it didn't work. And the Charlo fight, I thought it did. I agree with you, Ty. I thought it did. And the Herd fight, it just couldn't work. He was too little. Anything he did couldn't work. So, I mean, this fight, everything now is kind of razor thin with it. So he's going to be a smaller man, and he's going to come in fighting the guy who's more skilled than the past two guys who have victories over him. This is going to be a troublesome fight for Trout. It's just simple as that. I mean, he's going against the competition-wise, I think the best competition he's fought in a bit. I mean, outside of, you know, Cotto and Canelo, the best competition he's fought in a bit. And, I mean, he's going against a guy who's kind of coming into his own with his power.
Uh-huh.
This is a dangerous fight for Trout. Not an unwinnable fight, because Trout has the skills. I think Trout is naturally more experienced, and I think he's naturally a better boxer than this Charlo. So,
but you know, we talked about guys being in the zone, like Lomachenko being in the zone. The Charlo brothers, those are two guys right now who appear to be in the zone. And Butch, you're an old Sixers fan, right? You talk about Jared Hurd. We talk about Jared Hurd, and I was telling Zito, when Jared Hurd weighs in, the day of the weigh-in, Jared Hurd looks like Caldwell Jones. The next day at the fight, he's like Daryl Dawkins. You know what I mean? Amazing how, like, it literally goes from like a thin, you know, small forward to a huge power forward. Like Zito said, I mean, I've never seen a guy. By the time he's in the ring, he looks like he's every bit of 180. He really does. At least. He really does.
At least. When he weighs in on the scales, he looks more than 154.
I know. It's amazing.
We have some good news from the North Philadelphia area. Mr. New Ray Robinson is the new sparring partner for Jeff Horn to get him prepared for the Terrence Crawford fight.
Okay.
Hey.
Okay. After Ray lost to Ugas, Jeff Horn's team said, hey, we were going to bring him in as a sparring partner, but they actually were thinking about not doing it since they didn't know where he would be at mentally. They figured a guy coming off of a knockout loss might not be in a place mentally to give them good work. So with that being said, I think that says a tremendous amount about the character of the new, that mentally he could come in there and still give him good, hungry work, you know what I mean? Because that was a concern of Horn's team. So the fact that they still brought him in shows you the character of a man when, you know, and how to get up after a loss.
Right.
Because we all lose.
Yeah,
how you get up.
I talked to him, I guess, Tuesday or Wednesday. He was really elated that he was going down there, and he was going to do his best to keep up with him and make sure everything went well. So we wish him a lot of good luck on that one.
Tall southpaw. That's what they see in Terrence Crawford, a tallish southpaw. So that's what he can give him.
And style-wise, I mean, it's all kudos to Ray because he has a similar style to Terrence Crawford in a bit. He doesn't have the physical gifts, but, I mean, as far as craftiness and as far as knowledge, he can offer, a lot of things,
Mm-hmm.
So.
I think another reason why they liked him, if I'm correct, is they said he also beat Terrence Crawford in amateurs. So, you know, there's some things that you know, the dude can really offer them. So.
Yeah, that's good. Well, guys, we're up against our time here. How about a medical report from our man in the other country there?
Well, he's home from Cleveland, back in your old state of Florida, and he's healing up and, you know, one day at a time.
Excellent, excellent. I'm glad he's doing well. I'll give him a call when we get off the air. But, guys, I want to thank you again for everything. It's been a tremendous hour. We covered an awful lot of fights and styles here, and I appreciate everything that you bring to the table each and every night. So, Ty, you want to lead us out?
Hey, it's been great talking to you guys this week. Book Zito, we miss Brady, Dr. Chris. Love everyone. Bob is our co-pilot. Talk to you guys next weekend.
See?
Oh, man, another wonderful show. I want to thank you guys, my Frank Words family, Ty and Butch. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob, and if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call. Butch?
Just so everybody knows, Dr. Chris wanted to be with us tonight, but he's babysitting his grandchildren. God help those poor kids. I talked to him just before airtime, and he was at a restaurant with the kids. So he wanted to tell everybody he'd like to be with us, but he had family commitments. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and see somebody in a uniform, whether it's military uniform, fire department, or even the street department, please, it's a very, very difficult time for all of us out there on the streets. Please just let them know you know they're there. A handshake, a wink, anything will do. The best thing you can say to anybody in uniform is be safe, my brother and my sister. These programs are dedicated to those who've lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Bainter, Patrolman Jeffy Yazowitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman and Officer Crispin, Lakeland PD, Chief Al Hogel, Longview Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Jameen, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff, Delaware State Troopers Sergeant Rodney Bond, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Arthur Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, Special Inspector Benigalacha, Delaware, Florida Department of Law Enforcement, Delaware State Trooper Corporal Stephen Ballard, Kissimmee Patrol Officer Matt Baxter, Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Bill Gentry, Highland County Sheriff's Office. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. Good night. God bless. Have a great week.
Shema Ezahir Ma Son Hashem Evorat Fet Hakuig Again Ma Ezahir Ma
All units be advised, 1999 has responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul.